Osho, Tao, the Pathless Path, Volume 2, talks an extract from the Lita Zoo, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 4.
The first question. You have talked much on love, relationship, union, etc. Is there a merging between the Tao and Tantra? Tantra means technique, and Tao can have no relationship with any technique whatsoever. Tao is non-methodological, non-technical. Tao means spontaneity. How spontaneity can have a technique? You cannot practice it. If you practice it, you miss it. There is no way to cultivate it. A cultivated spontaneity will be anything but cannot be spontaneity. Tao means let go. Wherever your energy moves, allow it to move. Don't swim, float with the river. Swimming is a technique. But if you are just flowing with the river, what technique is needed? Technique means you have a direction. You want to reach somewhere. Technique means you want to impose your will on reality. You want to be someone, somewhere, in some state. You have a desire. You have a projection. Tao says you are already there. You are already that. There is nowhere to go and nothing else to be. So just relax and let things happen. Whatsoever happens is good. There is no denial in Tao, no rejection, no repression. It is the greatest rebellious attitude possible. Never man's intelligence has risen higher than Tao. But there is no way to it. You cannot be guided to it. Buddha has talked about 5 ways to reach truth. First he calls the way of sila, the way of morality, character, virtue. Second he calls the way of knowledge. Third he calls the way of dhyana, meditation. Fourth he calls the way of devotion. And fifth he calls asekhya, that which cannot be taught. That fifth is Tao. It cannot be taught. Yes, it can be learned, but it cannot be taught. And when I say it can be learned, I mean if you relax. If you allow life to happen to you, if you don't create a barrier, if you are ready to go wherever it leads, you will learn it. It is the most dangerous path because you will not be in control. Your mind cannot manipulate. Your mind cannot in any way prepare You will have to live moment to moment, as the trees live, and as the stars live, and as the mountains live. You will have to live in the same way, natural way. Tao is nature. So the Indian Tantra cannot have any merger with Tao. The Indian Tantra is very scientific. It is the science of how to transform sexual energy into spiritual energy. How to create the dynamo that changes, transforms, transmutes energy. How to move from the lower to the higher. How to go from the earth to heaven. It is a way from sex to super consciousness. It is very technological. Tao has no technique. First thing to be understood. But then another thing of great importance is that Tao has its own tantra, but it is not technique. There is no meeting possible between Indian Tantra and the Chinese Tao. No meeting possible. They are as far away, poles apart. Impossible to mix them. And if somebody tries to mix them, Tao will be destroyed. Tantra will not be destroyed. Always remember, whenever you mix a higher standpoint with a lower, the higher is destroyed, the lower is not destroyed. It is always the higher that loses, because the higher is delicate. The higher is very, very vulnerable, fragile, like a flower. If you clash a flower with a rock, the rock is not going to be destroyed. The rock may not even come to know that there has been a clash. But the flower will be gone, crushed, destroyed. Tao is the highest possibility. Tantra can destroy it. So remember not to mix them. But Tao has its own Tantra, because Tao is a total world view. It has everything that is possible. It is the whole. So there must be something in it for love, for sex. There is. What is Tao is the Tantra. I have to use the word Tantra. Remember it. But I am not using it in the Indian sense. What is Tao is Tantra? It is spontaneity in sexuality. It is a spontaneity in love. For example, if you read a tantra manual, Indian tantra manual, there is great ritual in it. Every step is very clearly indicated. It is not easy to practice Indian tantra. You will have to become an adept. Don't fool around. Don't think that while you are making love to a woman, you are practicing Tantra. Tantra is difficult. It is a long process. And it takes years to get trained into Tantra. And the greatest training and the most difficult problem that arises is that Tantra allows a man to make love to a woman only when the man has lost all sexual attraction towards the woman. There is no sexual attraction at all. That is the whole process. The mother, the woman becomes almost a mother to you, or a sister to you, a goddess. She has to be worshipped. In Tantra ritual, the woman has to be worshipped like a goddess. And for months together, one has to practice that worship. The woman sits naked in front of you on a throne. and you worship and you bow down and you pray to her and you create the idea in your deepest core of consciousness that that is just representative of all womanhood, motherhood. She is a goddess. One day, slowly you lose all sexual interest in her. You become auto-hypnotized with your own idea. The day when you lose all sexual interest in her body, and you can look through and through, and the body is no more a thrill. Even the body is not seen at all. The woman becomes luminous. She is just a presence. Only then the master allows you to make love to her. Now, love will have a total different quality. There is no sex involved in it. No attraction involved in it. No physicality involved in it. It is absolutely spiritual meeting of two souls. But that takes a long process. Many rituals, many prayers, many yantras, many meditations. After years of training, you come to that point where the woman is no more a woman to you. Where she has almost become a mother. Motherhoodness has arisen. You have projected that motherhoodness on her. You see her breasts, but they no more provoke any sexuality in you, but just an idea of a mother. You see her body, and you start feeling that you are part of her body, just as you were part of your mother. It is recreating the mother. And it is a long process. Tantra is very procedural, ritualistic, and a great experiment in hypnosis, auto-hypnosis, and a great experiment in getting rid of the idea of sex. It is not sexual at all, as it is commonly misunderstood. It is a totally different attitude, not sexual at all. It is very prayerful. And when you make love to a woman, after you have become an adept in Tantra and the master has allowed you, and it has to depend on master's agreement. It has not to depend on you. When the master sees in your eyes, all lust has disappeared. Your body has become almost asexual. And the master can see, now you are standing before the woman as a small child, unaware of sexuality. You are naked, she is naked. But you are not at all interested in sexuality. When the master confirms it, when he gives you a signal, then you are allowed. It depends on the master. He has to watch carefully. It takes months, sometimes years, to prepare for it. Tao has its own tantra. First thing, Tao never divides into the lower and the higher. That is the beauty of it. Because the moment you divide reality into lower and higher, you are getting schizophrenic. The moment you say something is sacred and something is profane, you have divided. The moment you say something is material and something is spiritual, you have divided. You have split reality. Reality is one. There is neither matter nor spirit. Reality is one. It expresses itself in many forms. On one level as matter, on another level as spiritual. The spiritual is not higher and the material is not lower. They stand on the same level. That is the Taoist attitude. Life is one. Existence is one. It is tremendous oneness and there is no valuation. The first thing in Tao is to drop duality. Sex is not lower and samadhi is not higher. Samadhi and sex both are expressions of the same energy. There is nothing laudable about samadhi and there is nothing condemnable about sex. The Tao acceptance is total, absolute. There is nothing wrong in the body and there is nothing beautiful in the spirit. They are both beautiful. The devil and God are one in Tao. The heaven and hell are one in Tao. The good and bad are one in Tao. That is the greatest non-dual understanding. So no condemnation and no preparation. To prepare for what? One has simply to relax and be. If you can love a woman spontaneously. In fact, Tao will say Tantra is a wrong attitude in this way because you have to prepare for it. Preparation means you are preparing for the future. Tao knows only one time, that is now, and only one place, and that is here. Now is the only time and here is the only place. Here is the heaven and now is nirvana. So don't prepare. If in some moment love flows, love takes possession of you, go with it. Don't push the river. Don't try to give it any shape. Don't try to fix it into any ritual. Just go with it. In deep trust, in deep gratitude, go with it. While making love to a woman, don't try to prove anything as in the West people are trying. Don't try to prove anything. Because when you start proving, your mind has come in. While you are making love to a woman, forget all about that you are man and she is a woman. Let boundaries merge and mix. You don't remain a man, otherwise you will miss. Because again a dualism comes, you are the man and she is the woman. Nobody knows, while two persons really make love, many times it happens the man becomes the woman and the woman becomes the man. Who bothers who is who? And if you are thinking about it, then the mind is there and the mind is a barrier. It does not allow the unison to happen totally. So Tao says, simply go spontaneously, with no rituals, with no idea to prove. And remember, never use sexuality for anything. Tantra uses as a step towards samadhi. Tao says, never use anything as a means. Everything is an end unto itself. The moment you start thinking of somewhere to go, something to reach, some result to attain out of it, you are not total. You are divided. Your mind is already in the future. There is no means and no ends. Everything simply is and intrinsically beautiful and unto itself. In Tao, this is very basic. Love, eat, go for a morning walk, swim in the river, sit in the sun, watch the stars. But let everything be simple, not for anything else. Sing a song, but not for any results. Look at these trees, but not for any results. Go for a morning walk, but not for health. Don't be a naturopath. Just go for a walk. It is beautiful. Health is a byproduct. You need not worry about it. It happens. Lie down in the sun. Enjoy it. Not for anything else. Life for its own sake. That's what Tao is. And in that relaxed attitude, life starts pouring into you from everywhere. All doors open. All windows open. Existence flows in you. You flow into existence. Tao is very simple. And hence very difficult, because we are very complex people. Simple things don't appeal us. Tantra appeals many people. Tao has not that much appeal. Tao appeals very rarely. If Tao appeals you, consider yourself. You are fortunate. The very possibility of your getting interested into Tao is a great blessing. And translate everything in terms of Tao and it becomes a spontaneity. The second question, Bhagwan, can you summarize your teaching in short? Because I am here only for a day or two. It is impossible. In the first place, I have no teaching to summarize. I am not a teacher. I am a prajna. I have no catechism. I cannot give you 10 commandments. Do this, don't do that. And whatsoever I say today, I may contradict tomorrow. Because my commitment is to the moment. Whatever I had said yesterday, I am no more committed to it. The moment I said it, I have become free of it. Now I don't bother about it. I don't look at it again. Whatever I am saying to you right now is true this very moment. Tomorrow, I will not be committed to it. Whatsoever tomorrow will bring, I will say. Whatsoever today has brought, I am telling you. And if they are contradictory, who I am to make them consistent? I don't make any effort on my own. My commitment is to the moment. I am never committed to the past. I am like a river. Where I will be tomorrow, nobody knows, not even I myself. You will be surprised, I will also be surprised. The question must be from someone who comes from the continent I call Asirema. It is America, red in the reverse order. America is topsy-turvy. Everything has gone chaotic. And people are in such a hurry. that they have even forgotten that there are few things which you cannot get into a hurry, for which patience is a must. Truth, you cannot get in such a hurry. Patience is the basic condition for it. It is not like instant coffee. And it does not come packed in tins. It does not come ready-made. Truth is not a commodity that somebody can give it to you. It grows in you. That's what I mean. I am a presence. I am not a teacher. If you are here, something may grow in you. And I say may, because it depends on you. I am here. If you are ready to receive me, something will start growing in you. It is like a child becomes a young man. Yes, truth is like that. The false personality drops and a true being arrives. It is a child becoming a young man becoming an old. There is no way to hurry up the process. You cannot make a child grow up fast in one night, in a day or two. It will take time. And it is good that it takes time. Because only through time, things become seasoned. But in America, there is a hurry, a mad hurry. I have heard an American and a French bride were discussing love. A Frenchman is very subtle when it comes to love, the French girl explains. He begins by kissing the fingertips. Then he kisses the shoulder. Then the back of the neck. Boy, the little American bride interrupted. By that time, an American husband is back from his honeymoon. In America, things have gone crazy. Everything has to be done with speed and fast. Speed seems to be the only value. It has never been a value anywhere else before. It had to wait to become a value for America to be discovered. Speed has become a value. If you are doing something fast, it is good. Nobody bothers what it is. For what you are doing. If you are doing it fast, perfectly good. If you are driving fast, nobody bothers where are you going. You may not be going anywhere in particular. But if you are going fast, everybody is happy. You may be going directly into death. But everybody is happy going so fast. Beautiful. No, I cannot do that. I cannot summarize. I have no teaching. And even if I had a teaching, I will not summarize it. Because the more you summarize something, the more it becomes less alive. Life is vast. Love is limited. Love is vast. Love can be summarized. Love cannot be summarized. Love is defined. But life is excessive. You cannot summarize life. You can summarize love. There cannot be a synopsis of life. I am alive. There is no way to summarize me. And I am still alive. So whatsoever you will summarize, I will decide tomorrow. I have heard a Hollywood producer studied the large script submitted by a new writer and complained, "It is much too long. Just give me a synopsis." The next day, the writer returned with a 5-page synopsis. "It is still too long," insisted the producer. "I am a busy man. Just give me a digest of this." An hour later, the writer returned with a sheet of paper on which was written, "Hero is a lieutenant. Heroine is married to his colonel. Madly in love with each other. Commit suicide." "It is no good," said the producer. "It is Anna Karenina word for word." When you summarize, by and by, things become absurd. Never summarize anything that is alive. "I am still alive. When I am gone and dead, then people will summarize. And I am going to give them hell of a trouble." It will not be easy thing. They will get nuts. It will be impossible to put me in a synopsis. It has been always so. You cannot summarize Buddha. Because of summarizations, so many schools were born. Buddha died. Then the question was there. People wanted to summarize. 40 years the man was teaching. Morning, afternoon, evening. 40 years. He had talked a lot. He has said so many things. Now, the master was gone and it had to be summarized. A great assembly was called. 500 oldest disciples gathered together. And they started reciting whatsoever they have heard the master. There were so many contradictions. One said something, somebody contradicted, he said, "I have heard him say exactly the opposite." Now there was great debate, discussion, and split. 36 schools were born out of summarization. And those 36 have become by now 360. When a man like Buddha is there, he is talking to different people in a different way because everyone's need is different. Truth is not something like a commodity. When you come to me, and if you really want to know what is my truth, you will have to be here. Because my truth can be expressed to you only when I have come to know your truth too. When I have come to know you and you have come to know me, in that meeting will be the glimpse. It cannot be given to you. You will have to receive it and you will have to prepare for it. You will have to become a very relaxed being. You will have to be able to soak and allow me to sink deep into your heart. No, I cannot supply a catechism as Christians do. That is not possible. And it will not be of any use to you. Recovering from a severe operation, the man believed that the doctors were withholding from him his proper share of food. All he got each meal time was a teaspoonful of custard. "Is that all I get?" he asked the nurse. "That's all for a while," she answered. He swallowed it with a good deal of grumbling. "Nurse," said the patient later, "bring me a postage stamp. I want to do a little reading." summarized, it will be a postage stamp. It will not help. It will not be enough to read. If you want to read, read me. Don't be bothered about summarization. Time will be needed. Because it is a love relationship between the master and the disciple. It needs time to grow, to become intimacy. Only in deep intimacy something can be revealed. Transfer. It is a transfer of energy, not of words. So please, if you are going in a day or two, you can go, you are free. But don't carry any idea of what I am teaching here. Because that will be ununderstanding or even worse, misunderstanding. If you have heard me say something, forget. Because in a day or two, you could not have heard anything significant. And whatsoever you feel you have heard will be very non-essential. It happens in the Amsterdam National Museum. An elderly couple came to see Rembrandt's masterpiece, The Night Watch. When after a long walk through the many corridors they finally reached the famous painting, the usher overheard the man say to his wife, "Look, what a beautiful frame." The frame may have been beautiful, but can't you see something is missing in the admiration? Something essential is lost. I'm not saying that the frame was not beautiful. The frame may have been the most beautiful frame in the world. But to go to see Rembrandt's masterpiece, The Night Watch, and then to talk about the frame is absurd. Even to see the frame is foolish, is stupid. The painting is not the frame. The frame has nothing to do with the painting. What I am saying is just a frame. What I am is the painting. Look at the masterpiece and don't be bothered with the frame. The third question, can the master really save the disciple? Certainly, absolutely. If the disciple is really a disciple, he is already saved. It is not that first you have to be a disciple and then you will be saved. In the very being, in your very being a disciple, you are saved. In your very surrender, you are saved. It is not that the master will save you afterwards because you are a disciple. Just by being a disciple, you are saved. In that very surrender, you have dropped the ego. That ego was the barrier. That ego was hindering the path. The barrier disappears. You are saved. In fact, you have always been saved. You were carrying unnecessary load. Because of that load, you could not fly into the sky. Now you can fly. The master is just an excuse. It is difficult for you to drop your ego without a master. Because you need some excuse. Otherwise, how to drop it? Where to drop it? In whose feet to drop it? The master is just an excuse. you fall in love with a man like Jesus or a man like Buddha, literally affect thousands of people, seekers, who fall in love. And the man is so tremendously beautiful that you would like to surrender all. That is just an excuse. Once you have surrendered, you will know. You are not saved by anybody else, you are saved by your surrender. But it will be known only when you have surrendered, not before it. To become a disciple is to be saved. You ask, can the master really save the disciple? That is very simple. It is nothing much to fuss about. Sometimes it has happened that a disciple has saved the master. Because in fact, it is love that saves. Sometimes it has happened that the master was not really a master, but may have been a charismatic man, may have been a man of great magnetism, was not himself enlightened, and somebody surrendered to him, and through surrender became enlightened. Many times it has happened the disciple has become enlightened before the master. You will be surprised, because you think only you can become enlightened through an enlightened master. All rubbish. You become enlightened through surrender. Even if you have surrendered to somebody who is just a pseudo master, who simply pretends that he is a master, but if your surrender is total, you are saved. And it has happened sometimes that the master was saved by the disciple when the disciple became enlightened. Let me tell you one beautiful Hasidic parable. Elisha ben Abua was a great religious scholar, but he was just a scholar. He attracted many people, many talented people he attracted. His name was known all over Israel. Many people came and surrendered to him. But he was just a scholar, a pundit. He was not a real master. He knew about God, but he had never encountered God. And it happened that late in his life, he turned a skeptic and became rebellious, became irreligious. Turned against God. And he was a great logician and well versed in scriptures. It was very difficult to defeat him. When he started talking against God, he was as impressive as when he was talking for God. He was a real intellectual. His chief disciple, Rabbi Meir, tried many times to bring him back to the fold. The disciple tried to bring him back to the fold. Rabbi Meir had become enlightened, and he was his disciple, Elisha ben Abua's disciple. And the disciple tried many times to bring him back to the fold, but the old man was really a logician, and it was impossible to argue with him. And the disciple suffered very much because he loved the man. He knew that he is not enlightened, and he knew now that he is not a real man of knowing, but he loved the man and he felt grateful because he has become enlightened through him, whosoever he is, whatsoever he is, but through surrendering into his feet. Rabbi Meir has become enlightened. How can he become ungrateful? He persisted. Rabbi Meir, however, persisted in his attempt. When he heard that Elisha was dangerously ill, he went to visit him. He again asked him to repent, But Elisha asked, will he receive me now? Will God receive me now? Will he forgive me? Yes, replied Rabbi Meir. Elisha wept and died. And a few days after, Rabbi Meir was told that a fire was issuing out of the grave of his master. He went there, covered it with a mantle, and said, slumber tonight, for perchance the Lord will save you. And if not, I will save you. Sleep until morning. This is of tremendous beauty. He says, sleep tonight, for perchance the Lord will save you. And if not, I will save you. Sleep until morning. That's why I say, it is very simple for a master to save you. Sometimes, even the contrary has happened, that a disciple has saved a master. But remember, it is love that saves. It is surrender that saves. If you can remember that, love liberates. That is a Mahamantra. Love saves. Love liberates. Fall in love with a master and you are saved. The fourth question, Li Tzu devastates Confucius with few words and subtly. You have been devastating him discourse after discourse with a canoe of words and have virtually clubbed him to death. I doubt if anyone in the ashram would defend Confucianism. Please let Confucius and me rest. Both together? It is impossible. If you want to rest, Confucius has to be killed utterly. With Confucius, there is no possibility for rest. Whatever I am saying or whatever Li Tzu is saying has nothing to do with the historical Confucius. Remember it. I am not against that poor man, Confucius. Why should I be? And he was a beautiful man in his own right. Why I am trying to destroy Confucius so deeply? Because Confucius is part of your mind. Everybody's mind. Confucius has ruled over humanity. You may not even have heard his name. That doesn't matter. You may not know who he is, but deep inside, Confucius is the ruler. In India, Manu is the ruler. He is the Indian counterpart of Confucius. All over the world, there are counterparts of Confucius. Confucius is symbolic. What he represents? He represents the legal mind. He represents the formal mind. He represents the ritual mind. He represents the conventional mind, the straight mind. He represents tradition. I am destroying tradition, convention, the legal mind, the structure. Of the conformist. Confucius is the conformist par excellence. And you all have it in your mind. Lao Tzu rarely enters into your mind. He is rebellion. He is going beyond tradition. He is going beyond past. He is going beyond all structures. Confucius is a structure, Lao Tzu is no structure. Confucius is character, Lao Tzu is characterlessness, freedom. Remember it, all character is imprisonment enforced on you by the society, enforced on you by the state, by the priest and the politician. This character that you carry around you is a cage. Lao Tzu says there is a different character which is not imposed by the society, a different discipline which is not enforced from the outside but comes from inner awareness. Only that is true. Only follow that. Only follow your own inner small still voice. Confucius says, listen to the scriptures, listen to the ancient masters, listen to tradition. Lao Tzu says, listen only to your own inner voice and follow it wherever it leads. It is God's voice. It is Tao. You ask me, I doubt if anyone in the ashram would defend Confucianism. In fact, everybody is defending. Nobody will be able to say it, but deep down you are defending. Otherwise, you all will become enlightened if you are not defending Confucius. The moment you are not defending Confucius, there is no barrier for you to become enlightened. You are enlightened. Confucius drops. You become enlightened. Confucius goes out from this door, from another door, enters enlightenment. You are not enlightened, you must be defending Confucianism. May not be very consciously. It may be just an unconscious habit. You have been conditioned for it. That's why you ask me, please let Confucius and me rest. I cannot help you to rest. I am here to help you to rebel. And only after rebellion will come the real rest. Whatsoever you call rest now is nothing but a slumber. Is nothing but a start of a sleep. All sleep is not rest. Because in your sleep you are dreaming 1001 things and you are going through many nightmares. I would like you the real rest. What Jesus says to his disciples, come to me and I will give you rest. All those who are heavy laden, come to me. I will give you rest. That rest is a totally different thing. It is not the rest that comes by living in a crowd with the herd, following the herd. Certainly, you feel okay. But okay is just okay. No problem, no inconvenience. Comfortably you live and comfortably you will die. That is not the rest I am leading you towards. The real rest means you have come to your own being, centered, grounded. You have been daring enough to assert that you are yourself and you are no more trying to imitate anybody else. You are not trying to become a carbon copy. You have become an authentic person, an authentic being. Then comes the rest, the real rest. With Confucius, that is not possible. With Confucius, you will always be in conflict. Confucius means conflict. He will always say, this is bad and this is good. Choose the good against the bad. then what you will do, you will have to repress the bad and enforce the good. You will become a hypocrite. Follow Confucius and you will be a hypocrite. Follow Lao Tzu. And you are not following anybody, you are following yourself. And you will become an authentic being. To be authentic is the only rest there is. The fifth question, I like to listen to your talks very much, but I hate the meditation. Is it okay, Bhagwan? Perhaps my path is that of prayer. If you really enjoy my talks, you will enjoy the meditations too. Because they are interconnected. In fact, my talks are nothing but like appetizers. If you enjoy the appetizer and you don't enjoy the lunch, you are going to die sooner or later. You will die starved. Talks are just to prepare you for the meditation. If you hate the meditations, then you have not heard me. Then you may think you have heard me, but you have not heard me. Hearing me, what else there is to do then? If you have heard me, you will be ready to go deep into meditations. And whatever I am saying will become a real experience only when you have gone into the meditation. It will become your experience. Listening to me, it will remain borrowed. Listening to me, you may be thrilled by the possibility of it. Listening to me is as if I am talking about the beautiful Himalayas. And you listen to me and you enjoy it. But you have never been to the Himalayas. And whatsoever I say is nothing compared to the beauty of Himalayas. How it can be put into words? You will have to go. If you are really listening to me, one day suddenly you will feel, now the time has come and I have to go for the adventure. I have to take the risk. Meditations are a real journey. Here I simply seduce you for meditations. It is not the end. It is the beginning. I have heard a movie house usher was astonished to see a big brown bear sitting in the front row munching peanuts. "Say, you," he shouted, "you are a bear. What are you doing in here?" "Why? I enjoyed the book so much," replied the bear. "I thought I would like to see the picture." If you are really listening to me and enjoying it, one day you would like to see the picture too. If it is true that you enjoy whatsoever I am saying, then how it is possible that you hate the meditation? I am not an entertainment. Maybe you are using me as an entertainment. Maybe sitting here for 1.5 hours every day, you forget your worries. For 1.5 hours, you are transported into another world, into my world. And you see beautiful things, at least visualize, imagine. And then you are gone. And then you become addicted to it. Every day then you have to come and listen to me. Then it is just an intoxicant. Then it is not going to help. I am talking about the food. Just the talk about the food is not going to help. The menu is not the food. The talks are just the menu. Then you will have to order. It happens, the American playboy checked into one of the most exclusive hotels in Gay Paris. He told the room clerk he wanted the best room in the place. When he reached the room, he was impressed with its exquisite furniture and tasteful decor. However, he spied a number of colored buttons on the wall. "Tell me," he asked the bellhop, "what are these buttons for?" "Well, monsieur," said the bellhop, "when you press the gold one, a beautiful blonde appears." "Go on," said the playboy gleefully. "When you push the red one, a redhead appears. And when you push the brown, a beautiful brunette appears." "Let us forget about the room," said the playboy. "I will take the buttons." But buttons come with the room. Just taking the buttons home won't help. And then you can go on pushing the buttons, nobody will appear. In the memoirs of Lawrence of Arabia, he writes that once he took 12 Arabs to France with him. For the first time they had gone out of their country. And there was a great exhibition in France, and he had taken them to see the world in that exhibition. But he was very much puzzled. Once they will enter into the bath, they will not get out. Hours they will remain in the bath. But he thought it is natural. They come from a desert country where water is so scarce. So they are enjoying their tub and shower, and they will jump and dance in the bathroom. They were not at all interested in the exhibition. The moment they will come back, and they were always in a hurry to come back to the hotel, and they will say, "Let us go back," and they will run into the bathroom, and they will enjoy. The last day, everything is packed and everything has reached to the cars, and they are going to the airport, but all the Arabs disappeared suddenly. So Lawrence inquired where they have gone. "And the time is coming and we will be late." Then he suddenly remembered, maybe they are back in the bathroom. So he rushed, and they were all there trying to take out the faucets. And he said, "What are you doing?" He said, "We thought, why not take these faucets? We will enjoy them in Arab." They were thinking the water comes through them. This is a miracle. They were not aware that there is a pipeline and a great mechanism behind it. You cannot just take the faucet. It will not be of any use. What I am saying to you is just a faucet. There is a great source behind it, from where it all comes. Unless you go into there, listening to me only is not going to help. It may be a solace, a consolation, an addiction, but it is not going to bring any revolution in your life. And you say, "Is it okay?" It is not okay at all. You are wasting your time. If you leave listening to me and continue meditation, that is far better than leaving meditation and only listening to me. And then you ask, "Perhaps my path is that of prayer." Don't try. to deceive yourself? Have you done any prayers? Have you been praying? You say, perhaps. You have not tried even that. Maybe you are using the word prayer just to avoid meditation. Prayer itself is a meditation. And to avoid meditations in the name of prayer will not help. These escapes are for weaklings. Don't be a coward. People come to me, if I give them prayers and I tell them do this prayer, they come and they say, Bhagwan, maybe prayer is not my path. If prayer is to be given to them, they say prayer is not their path. Then it becomes difficult to do the prayer. If meditation is given, they think meditation is not their path. In fact, you don't want to do anything. You don't want to grow. You don't want to be transformed. There is a story about two ministers who were crossing one of the Scottish lakes. This was in the days before roads and automobiles. A person got to his destination by getting into a boat and being ferried across the lake. These lakes are sometimes treacherous. Storms come up suddenly. A boat can be capsized and people drown within 5 minutes on what had been a beautiful and calm day. These two ministers wanted to cross the lake. One was a tall, husky, 6-foot countryman with muscles like blacksmith, and the other was a small, weedy, studious townsman, the long and the short of it. They hired a boat and the old boatman got out the oars and they started off. In about 5 minutes' time, a terrible storm came up and churned up the lake. The boat was rocking and the boatman said, "Me lads, you will have to help me. Grab hold of those other oars if you expect to come out of this alive." So the two clergymen picked up the oars and began to bend their backs. It was pretty hard work, but for a few minutes they kept the boat straight into the eye of the wind. Suddenly the storm got worse. The husky minister threw down his oars and said, "Let us pray." But the boatman yelled, "No, no, the little one can pray, but you keep on rowing." Don't be a coward. Let the little ones pray. You take the challenge of meditation. It is a challenge. Prayer seems to be easy because you have nothing to do. You have just to say, "God, do this, do that." You give God work in prayer. And if he is not doing, so he is responsible. You had said, what more can you do? Meditation is to do the work yourself. And my feeling is, if you do your work to your uttermost capacity, only then God starts doing work on you. Never before it. Unless you help yourself, no help ever comes from God. If you understand my approach, if your meditation succeeds, then only prayer can start, never before it. When you have done all that you can do, when you have not saved anything, when you have put yourself totally at the stake, and then you feel nothing is happening, then you are entitled to ask the sky, "Now help me, what more I can do?" And the help comes. But not doing anything on your own, Just every night when you are going to sleep, just saying half asleep a prayer that God do this, do that, and then go to sleep. These things will not help you at all. If you really want God to do something to you, first you have to try your uttermost. At the optimum, help happens, never before it. When you are doing all that you can do, absolutely all that you can do, immediately help is available. The sixth question. Recently you talked again about the adverse aspects of marriage. Would you please talk about what you mean by intimacy? Particularly when is staying together through difficult times positive and when is it negative? Marriage is a way to avoid intimacy. It is a trick to create a formal relationship. Intimacy is informal. If marriage arises out of intimacy, it is beautiful. If you are hoping that intimacy will arise out of marriage, then you are hoping in vain. Of course, I know many people, millions of people have settled for marriage than for intimacy, because intimacy is growth. It is painful. Marriage is very secure. It is safe. There is no growth in it. One simply is stuck. Marriage is a sexual arrangement. Intimacy is a search for love. Marriage is a sort of prostitution, a permanent sort. Somebody goes to a prostitute, one has got married to a woman or to a man, a permanent prostitution. The arrangement is economical, not psychological, not of the heart. So remember, if marriage arises out of intimacy, then it is beautiful. That means everybody should have lived together before one gets married. Honeymoon should not happen after marriage, it should happen before marriage. One should have lived the dark nights, the beautiful days, the sad moments, the happy moments together. One should have looked into each other's eyes deeply, into each other's being deeply. And how to decide if your intimacy is helping you to grow and become mature, then it is positive and good and healthy, wholesome. If it is destructive and it is not allowing you to become mature, rather it is helping you to remain childish, immature, then it is unhealthy. Any relationship that keeps you childish is evil. Get out of it. Any relationship that gives you challenges to grow, to adventure, to go deeper and higher into life. I am not saying that a positive marriage will not have problems. It will have more problems than the negative marriage. A positive relationship will have more problems because every day new challenges will be there. But each time a problem will be solved, you will have gone a little higher. Each time a challenge will be taken, you will find something has become integrated in your being. A negative relationship has no problem, or at the most pseudo problems, so-called problems, but not real problems. Have you not watched it? Wife and husband fighting for such trivia. They are not problems. Even if you fight, they don't give you anything. They don't help growth. Watch wives and husbands, watch yourself. You may be a husband, a wife. Just watch. If you are fighting on trivia, small things which don't mean anything anyway, then you will remain immature, childish. Real problems, authentic problems, which have really to be faced, create great turmoil in your being. Bring a cyclone. One has to face it. Never avoid them. The trivial questions are an escape from the real questions. Husband and wife will fight on very small things, which film to go and which do not to go. What color car has to be purchased? What model? What make? To what restaurant they are going this evening? Such trivia does not make any difference. About such problems, if you are too much making fuss, your relationship is not going to help you give any integrity, any center. I will call it negative. The positive relationship will face real problems. For example, if you are angry, or if you are sad, you will be sad in front of your wife, and you will not smile a false smile, and you will say, "I am sad." This has to be faced. If on the road walking with your wife, you see a beautiful woman pass by, and a great desire and longing arises in your heart, you will tell your wife that this woman created a great desire, stirred my heart. You will not avoid. You will not take your eyes away. And you will not pretend that you have not seen the woman at all. And whether you pretend or not, your wife has already known it. It is impossible. Immediately your energy, your presence changes. These are real problems. Just by getting married to a woman does not mean you are no more interested in any other woman. In fact, the day you will not be interested in any other woman, you will not be interested in your wife either. Why? For what? What your wife has got is special. If you are no more interested in women, you will be disinterested in your wife too. You are in love with her because you are in love with women still. She is just a woman. And sometimes you come across a woman which enchants you. You will say it to your wife. And you will face the turmoil that will arise. It is not trivia, because it will create jealousy. It will create a struggle. It will disturb all rest. You will not be able to sleep in the night. The wife will be throwing pillows at you. To be true, creates real problems. To be authentic creates real problems. And to say whatsoever is the case and never dimmer. Never look sideways, look straight and be true. And help the wife also to be true. Help the husband also to be true. Yes, there are problems in a real intimacy. More problems than in a negative state. More problems. Because if you are really intimate to the woman, how can you avoid the fact that you became interested in another woman? You have to say it. That is part of love, part of intimacy. You denude yourself. You expose yourself totally. You don't hold anything. Even in the night, if you dream a dream about another woman, in the morning you will relate it to your wife. I have heard about a film director, and in the night he started talking to his girlfriend, and he had the habit of talking loudly. So he was saying beautiful things, and the wife started staring at him. Suddenly, when you are married, even in your dream you remain afraid of your wife. Suddenly he became afraid of what he is saying. Felt the wife looking at. So he had the presence of mind. And he said, cut it. Now bring another scene. As if he is directing a film. If you really love the woman, in the morning you will tell your dream that you made love to a woman in the night, in your dream. Everything has to be shared. The whole heart has to be shared. Intimacy means there is no privacy. You don't carry anything private now. At least with the person you are intimate, you drop privacy. You are nude and naked, good, bad, whatsoever you are, you open your heart. And whatsoever the cost that you have to pay for it, and whatsoever the troubles you have to go through it, you go through it. That brings growth. And you help the other person also to drop all inhibitions, screens, masks. In an intimate relationship, one comes to see the original face of the other, and one comes to show his own original face. If a relationship helps you to find out your original face, then it is meditative, then it is religious. If your relationship simply helps you to create more and more masks and hypocrisies, then it is irreligious. Try to understand my definition. If my definition is understood, then out of 199 marriages are irreligious. Because they are simply creating more and more falsity. From the very beginning, the falsity starts. I have heard the minister casting an appraising eye over the bridal couple before him, and the goodly crowd come to witness the ceremony intoned, "If there is anyone here who knows why these two should not be joined together in wedlock, let him speak now or forever hold his peace." "I have got something to say," a voice rang out bold and clear. "You shut up," snapped the minister. "You are the groom." From the very beginning, they are not even married yet. He said, "You shut up, you are the groom." And that's how life starts of a married couple. People keep quiet. They don't say. They don't say the truth at all. They pretend lies. They smile when they don't want to smile. They kiss when they don't want to kiss. Literally, when you kiss and you don't want to kiss, the kiss is poisonous. Literally, when you don't want to smile and you have to smile, your smile is ugly. It is political. And then somehow one gets accustomed to these things, settles to the falsity, to the inauthenticity of life, and consoles oneself in thousand and one ways. Ah, we are very happy, insisted the husband. Of course, once in a while my wife throws dishes at me, but that does not change the situation one bit. Because if she hits me, she is happy, and if she misses me, I am happy. Such arrangements, one by and by, one comes to. Both are happy. The car in which the elderly couple was riding went over the cliff. It was an awful wreck. "Where am I?" moaned the man. When he opened his eyes, "In heaven?" "No," said her dazed wife, "I am still with you." These settlements are very hellish. What do you know in the name of relationship is just a pseudo game. So, remember it as a criterion. If you are growing more and becoming an individual, life is happening more to you. You are becoming more open. More beauty is felt in existence. More poetry is arising in your heart. More love flows through you. More compassion. More aware you are becoming. Then the relationship is good. Carry on. Then it is not a marriage. Then it is intimacy. But if the reverse is happening, that all poetry is disappearing and life becoming a prose project, all love is disappearing and life is becoming just a load, dead load, all song is dying and you are just living as a duty, then it is better to escape out of this prison. It is good for you. It is good for the partner with whom you are living. The seventh question was the man in Tuze's story, where a man had no memory, enlightened, or had he a glimpse? Do we get it and forget it and get it and forget it and one day maybe not forget? Yes, the man had a glimpse. If he has really become established, then there was no way to bring him back. You cannot bring a Buddha back. He had only a glimpse. He was just entering the door and he was pulled back. If he had entered the temple, then he was gone, gone forever. Many times glimpse will come and will disappear. It is natural. Because if enlightenment suddenly comes like lightning, like a thunder. You will be crushed. You will not be able to receive it. It will be too much. You will go mad. Glimpses come and prepare you. More and more glimpses will come, and by you will become acclimatized for a totally different world, a totally different dimension of being. Otherwise you will go mad. Sometimes it has happened that a man was working alone without a master and was not aware that one should not rush into it. Rushed into it and became mad. The master is needed for many things. He is needed mostly when you are coming very close to enlightenment. Then he is needed very, very deeply, because he will allow you only so far, slowly, slowly. In quantities, he will help you to absorb the vastness of the experience, the tremendousness of it. It is a mysterium tremendum. You are just like a drop, and it is like an ocean dropping in you. One has not to be greedy. First the master pushes you into it, and then he holds you and allows you very slowly to go into it. The man must have had only a glimpse. You ask me, do we get it and forget it, and get it and forget it, and one day maybe not forget? No. One day one forgets both getting and forgetting. Then it is there. One day one forgets both getting and forgetting. One day one simply recognizes it is your innermost nature. It is not something that you can get or that you can forget. You can get something from the outside. You can forget something from the outside. But it is your own flowering. It is you. It is your fragrance. How can you get it and how can you forget it? One day one forgets both getting and forgetting. Then one has come home. The last question. Bhagwan, 6 hours of sleep every night, 1.5 hours of satsang, playing the beautiful spiritual game with you, then suddenly switching over from the cold marble floor to a swivel chair, playing the orange airline executive, spectacular evening performances, changing daily, from absurd comedy to heavy melodrama, many roles, many plots, always extempore, playing father, husband, friend, stranger, wise man, fool. The one real factor in all this, which is not a game, is a deep, deep love for you. This is what makes all the games exciting. Can this be what they call working with the master? Yes, Krishna Muhammad. Exactly. That's what means by working with a master. To live suffused with the presence of the master. To live suffused with the love of the master. And to play all the games that God wants you to play, where God has placed you to go and play. Everything becomes a game. Yes, that's exactly what it is. Only love remains a reality. Everything becomes a game. And if you can play the so many games of life without being serious, without being identified, remaining a witness and enjoying the fun of it, you have understood. To be with a master is to learn that the whole life is a game, a maya. Nothing is serious. Nothing has to be avoided. Nothing has to be chosen in particular. Whatsoever happens, allow it to happen. Remain alert and allow it to happen. And your alertness, by and by, will help you to slip into totality. Remain aware and go on playing the games. Never escape. Never run away. To run away from the world means you have rejected God. To reject the world means you have rejected the God who has made the world. Love the world, because that is the only way to love God. And enjoy. And whatsoever He wants you to do, wherever He has placed you, enjoy that place. Sometimes on the marble floor, sometimes on a swivel chair, sometimes a wise man, sometimes a fool, sometimes this and sometimes that. Remain fluid. Move into one role to other. Flow. Don't get frozen. Seriousness freezes. Remain non-serious. Take life as joy, and it becomes prayer. Enough for today.